This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Well, Santino Cadiz, also live. Yeah, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
And good morning, good morning. It is 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to Positively Revolting on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm here with Ani. No, wait, I am.
You are
Ani.
You're here with Lynn.
That's right. And you're Lynn.
I am. You know, one just tangential thing. I just heard this morning that the talk radio that they do on NPR is going to be off the air now. Like, we are it. For morning talk radio. And
fancy
in the way
that
we do it, yes.
Well,
these days.
Just to let people know as well that about talk radio, there is a matching period. We are in our spring membership drive.
That is so exciting. That is really fun.
And I want to give people a big heads up because right now for this next hour during talk radio and talk radio only, there is a very generous anonymous KBOO volunteer who is making the offer to match the next $500 in donations called in during talk radio. So get your fingers dialing. It's 877-500-5266. Call on in. Get your support into Positively Revolting early this morning. And,
early and often.
Get your donation, your contribution, your membership to KBOO Community Radio matched by this wonderful and anonymous KBOO volunteer and member. Who we thank tremendously. So again, double the impact of your gift by calling right about now, 877-500-5266. We'll have Teresa and Conch on in a moment or two to tell us a lot more about that. But back on with the tempeh of the program. This morning, we are very, very glad to be joined by Robert Jensen. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Excellent. Robert is a professor of the School of Journalism at the University of Texas at Austin and a board member of the Third Coast Activist Resource Center in Austin. He's also the author of numerous articles and books, including All My Bones Shake, Seeking a Progressive Path to the Prophetic Voice, Getting Off, Pornography and the End of Masculinity, The Heart of Whiteness, Confronting Race, Racism, and White Privilege, and so many others, including your soon-to-be-released Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue, which is due out from City Lights next month. You've also co-produced a documentary film, so I've read, called Abe Osheroff, One Foot in the Grave, The Other Still Dancing. So, Robert, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us this morning.
Oh, great to be with you. Always great to be on KABU.
We enjoy having you. I've enjoyed talking with you over the last 10 years because I find that your work really has the ability to cut through things and get to the heart of the matter, clearly identifying root causes of social injustice issues and doing so in kind of a personal and unflinching way. Your latest work, Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue, is a call, really, I see it as a call to everyone who is doing social change work to develop a critical analysis of our current situation and to use that same unflinching engagement. When things start getting uncomfortable, don't just tune out, go deeper. You start in this book with a look at cultural, sort of our cultural state of anxiety, which you attribute to living outside of our evolutionary context. Culturally, we are in deep denial of the amount of harm we are doing to the environment, and that denial is in turn causing us to rearrange deck chairs on the Titanic of climate change. Can you tell us a little more about this? How does operating in this very fear-based and anxious culture affect our ability to assess, analyze, engage, and respond to our circumstances?
Yeah, in this book, Arguing for Our Lives, which is out now, it draws on my experience both as a political organizer and activist and also as a teacher. And over the last decade, what I've noticed is more and more people at some level recognizing the depth of the crises, the multiple cascading crises that we face. We're used to talking about our struggles within the context of the human family. How do we make a more just world? How do we distribute political power democratically? How do we create an economic system that's just? How do we deal with these really deeply embedded problems of white supremacy and patriarchy? But we also now know that in addition to those struggles within the human family, we're looking at a really unusual, unprecedented crisis in the relationship between human beings and the larger living world. Climate change is the most dramatic of these, but as I always say, on every front, ecologically, the news is bad and getting worse. Mm-hmm. And I think you know, there's a rational, intellectual level at which we deal with that, but there's also an emotional and psychological level. And over the last decade, I've noticed more and more people, myself included, sort of confronting that and, not surprisingly, not always knowing what to do about it. What do you do when it looks like the human experiment is coming to a very unpleasant end, for instance? And so that's where this book starts. Not only being able to develop one's critical thinking skills so you can analyze the world and know what the appropriate policy might be and all of that, which of course is still important, but also coming to terms with the reality of this sense of dread. I call it, in the introduction to the book, I talk about the age of anxiety in which we live. And I think that does adequately describe the way a lot of people feel, including people who are, you know, committed strongly to keeping things going the way they are. At some level, when you get below that, I think that anxiety is very common.
You know, also in that introduction, this other thing that you said really struck me, and I'm going to quote you. You say that when we recognize that experts can't answer all our questions and that sometimes experts' hubris can get us in trouble, then sharpening our critical thinking skills becomes more important than ever. An ignorance-based worldview is a call to that critical thinking. Explain to our listeners what an ignorance-based worldview is.
Yes, it seems a little odd for a university professor to be, you know, trumpeting ignorance. But let me explain. I borrow that concept from Wendell Berry, the great novelist, short story writer, poet that many people involved in the sustainable agriculture movement know, and Wes Jackson, who is a close colleague of Wendell Berry's and the co-founder of the Land Institute, I think probably the most important research center for sustainable agriculture. And when they say they advocate an ignorance-based worldview, they don't mean we should, you know, seek to be stupid. After all, Wes Jackson is a scientist. Wendell Berry is a writer. They have lived in intellectual spaces all their lives. What they mean is recognizing that for all that we have learned about the world through science, and what we have learned is quite dramatic and quite striking, they would say that we are still infinitely more ignorant than we are knowledgeable. You know, the modern human, the last 200-400 years, as we've peeled back the world through the scientific method, we've gotten pretty cocky. We think we know more than we do. And this call to an ignorance-based worldview is to remember that when we use science to go about intervening in the world, we are always affecting things in ways we cannot know. Some people talk about the law of unintended consequences. New scientific and technological interventions in the world do amazing things, but they also sometimes do things we did not anticipate, and those unintended consequences can be very dramatic. Just think of the invention of the internal combustion engine and burning petroleum. Well, it's done pretty amazing things. It's made our societies more mobile, for good or bad, but it's also, of course, unleashed all of these other environmental problems. And so an ignorance-based worldview, again, is not a call to be stupid. It's not a call to reject science. It's a call to keep science and human knowledge in perspective. The world is infinitely complex. The world is far more complex than our brains can truly grasp. And that's an important corrective to the kind of arrogance of modern science and modern technology.
We have with us this morning Teresa and Conch as well. SW, Teresa, we need to raise money for KABU and for Positively Revolting. And I want to start out by knowing what our goal is. What's our goal, Teresa?
Our goal is $1,200, and we only need to get 10 callers calling in with $10 a month to get that. So now's the time to call in. The number to call, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266.
Don't we have matching?
We are in a very temporary matching period from 8 to 9 a.m. You can double the impact of your donation without any extra money out of your pocket. How? Well, an anonymous KABU volunteer has made a generous offer to match the next $500 in donations. Called in during Talk Radio today, but only Talk Radio, which ends at the top of the hour, so do not delay. Double the impact of your gift by calling toll-free 877-500-KABOO right now. And when you call in with even just a $60 minimum pledge of support, that's a $5 a month pledge of support if you want to go from a monthly deduction from checking. You can get Arguing for Our Lives, a user's guide to constructive dialogue by today's guest, Robert Jensen. It's all about critical thinking, critical engagement with your peers and your community in attacking the problems head-on that we are facing right now. It is going against the grain of the media that wants to sell you shiny things, cars and pharmaceuticals that do strange side effects to you, and all that TV that does strange side effects to you. KABU does not do any strange side effects to you. It gives you the full effect of critical thinking, of differing voices, of culture from all quarters of the community and of civilization, wherever it may be.
And the way you can support it is to jump on in and call 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. I'm always excited when we have News and Public Affairs Day. If you are a new listener to KABU, then you should know that twice a year we eschew regular programs and have about 13 hours of news and information. So we'll be hearing lectures from Amy Goodman later on this morning. We'll be hearing Raj Patel. We'll be hearing from all manner of really critical thinkers who are addressing the social issues that we are looking at, that we are engaged with, that we are trying to shape our new world out of these ashes. And this kind of information, this kind of exchange of ideas is something that you don't get in other media. So right now is a great time to support KBOO, your community radio station, as we kick off News and Public Affairs Day, Spring Drive 13. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, for your $60 contribution, you can pick up a copy of Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. It's the latest book out by Robert Jensen, our guest this morning. And how are we doing, Teresa and SW?
Well, we got a couple of calls in. We want to thank Tim. Tim called in at 877-500-KBOO. Tim is renewing. He's from the heart of the Willamette Valley in Albany, Oregon. Stan is a new member. He is from Southwest Portland. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Stan.
And that makes it a flaming match period. We are, in fact, in the match period, so those contributions will be doubled, and it's an excellent time for you to call. Number to call, 877-500-5266. And we would like you to strike a match with us. You know, this is all about your participation. Now, one thing that I used to really look forward to in the membership drives is coming to this area and seeing Alma answer the phones. And Alma always had a little song that was something like, good morning to you. Thanks for calling KBOO. Let's see, how did the rest of it go?
We want your donations and your good wishes, too.
Yeah, that's how it went. And yeah. Alma gave us her all, and Alma has gone into other frequencies now, and so we won't be seeing that anymore, but I really enjoyed that. But it's typical of the KBOO spirit, and I would like you to join in on the KBOO spirit. 877-500-5266. Now, I'm talking to you. You're the one that has to do it because you understand why it's important, and I'm talking about right now. You got to do it. You got to strike the flaming match while the iron is hot and get that contribution doubled, right?
877-500-5266. That's the number, or kboo.fm online. Those are the ways to connect with your community radio station. Just go ahead and connect with us right now.
You can come down to Southeast 20 Southeast 8th if you want to as well.
And we'll check
what goes on here.
Get some breakfast from Bridges Cafe and Catering at 2716 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, because they have generously provided food for the pledge drive this morning.
And who else has provided food for the pledge drive since you started?
Today there's going to be Ibla Grill, which is at 1660 Southeast 3rd Avenue in Portland. And this evening we're looking forward to City Thai, 6341 Southwest Capitol Highway.
Excellent.
So thank you to all of our business partners who are supporting KBOO, and we're looking for you to become a supporter just like these great community businesses by calling 877-500-KBOO.
All right. Thanks very much, Teresa and SW. And Robert, thank you very much for holding on.
No, I don't mind holding, because I am a big fan both of community radio in general and especially of KBOO. I remember being on KBOO immediately after 9/11. It was one of the few places where journalists were willing to investigate, talk about, and confront the difficult issues after those attacks. I think community radio is the heart and soul of progressive media today, so I'm happy to be part of this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You know, Robert, in your book, you talk about that baseline anxiety and war. And I was thinking part of what we do is we have all these emotions and people get anxious, but they never quite make the loop. There's the years ago, that thing was batted around called an emotional IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be something we're missing. Robert Bly used to also talk about after war, nobody mourns. We just go on to the next crisis. We are continually going from jumping from one crisis to another without actually sort of completing the whole emotional loop that you have to mourn, and you have to sort of have it be complete. We're sort of a very incomplete society that way.
Yeah, I think that's true and very, very important. Obviously, we always want to, you know, hang on to our rational faculties, our intellectual abilities. We want to look at the facts. We want to analyze. But everybody understands that human beings are much more than calculating machines. And I think part of the problem we're talking about here is really the way that capitalism, especially consumer capitalism, a system that depends on keeping us sort of enthralled in this consumption cycle, when married with high technology, is really quite dangerous, that endless kind of entertainment we can get digitally. I think what we're talking about really is a society that is kind of numbed out, drugged out, easily diverted from these very difficult struggles that we're talking about. You know, during the pitch, you're talking about the importance of KABU and community radio, which is independent of all of those forces and can be a kind of space where people deal with these difficult subjects. And certainly the dominant culture doesn't want us anywhere near those subjects, because if we start thinking about those things, not just individually, but collectively, if we start coming together in social and political and community groups and voicing our own distress, our own discomfort with all of this, well, where is that going to lead? Well, I'll tell you, it leads to democracy. It leads to changes in the way economic systems work. It eventually, I would hope, leads to the end of empire, the end of a nation state that goes about the business of trying to dominate the rest of the world. So, you know, sometimes people say, oh, well, that's all just airy-fairy, squishy, you know, emotional talk. Well, we are emotional beings, and we've got to come to terms with, again, this anxiety, this sense of dread, this recognition that the systems within which we live are not only not serving the needs of people, but they're also undermining the capacity of the planet to sustain our own lives. That's a serious problem we're facing, to say the least.
I know, I've heard the saying, we are of nature, and we are in bodies, and we will die. Those are things that people, like right now, we're having this sort of little false spring, and when people can get out and be in their yards and some sunshine and be part of the ground a little bit, they're in a much better mood, and some of that anxiety kind of that we are so flooded with seems to abate a bit.
I think that's true, and that's why among the many positive signs that I see in this culture is the gardening movement, the urban food movement, the idea that there is something beyond just getting healthy food. There's something elemental about reconnecting to the earth. You know, I think about, I'm 54 years old, and I'm from a rural state, but when I think about my students, you know, 18-year-olds coming out of largely urban and suburban areas, often they've never had any connection to that larger living world that wasn't in some sort of manufactured setting, like an urban park or something. And there's lots of good to all of that, but where are we going to find that more elemental connection? That's also part of this process of rebuilding the world. We've got the rational, intellectual work that we need to do to analyze the problems. We've got the communal need to come back together, to discuss, to break out of the isolation that the dominant culture sometimes fosters. And then we've got this other task, to reconnect to the earth, to recognize that we are biological beings, that we don't live outside of it. And that's why a lot of people, myself included, I never talk about human beings and nature. I talk about the human and the non-human world, because nature is not separate from us. We are part of it. We are biological creatures. No matter how much time we spend in front of screens, and no matter how many chemicals we
consume, we still are
biologically based.
Right? And all of this may sound rather simple, even simplistic, but when we think about the day-to-day lives that we have, it's striking. And I'm not just pointing the finger at young people or people who are into high technology. I think this is a problem of the culture, fundamentally a problem of high energy, high technology society, especially in an economic system based on mass consumption, and in some sense keeping us all trapped.
Well, and just sort of feeding off of that for a moment, you know, it seems as though this culture actively discourages us from engaging each other. It seeks to keep us isolated. There are some cultural norms that whisper in our ear the very basics of isolation, like it's unwise to actually have any deep and meaningful discussions with your neighbors, with your colleagues at work. You can't discuss the overarching issues of religion or politics or anything else that makes our lives meaningful, because we might come into disagreement and things might get uncomfortable, and we certainly don't want to get uncomfortable. How do you respond to that? How do you get over that and don't discuss religion and politics and polite company sort of a cliche?
Well, you know, I always say in response to that, if we're not supposed to talk about religion and politics, what else is there to talk about? I mean, our lives are filled with lots
of... Dancing with the Stars.
Right. Okay, so, you know, I'm not against entertainment. I'm not against having fun. I'm not against occasionally, you know, taking a break. You know, I do it myself. I think everybody does. But when it comes to engagement with friends, neighbors, family, anybody, if you exclude religion and politics, and I'm using those two terms very broadly, politics, not just about, you know, Republicans and Democrats mm-hmm. arguing, and religion, not just about sectarian disputes about doctrine, but really those fundamental questions of who are we in the world, the fundamental questions of theology, and then the fundamental questions of politics. How are we going to distribute power and try to come to some just distribution of resources? Those are the fundamental questions of theology and politics. And if you bracket those out of your conversations, you're left with essentially the trivia of the world. And, you know, my experience is that when you can create spaces, and a lot of people involved in community organizing, I think, understand this, when you can create spaces where people not only can learn about a particular issue or contribute to a particular policy campaign, but where they can come together and feel that connection, it's really quite dramatic. Here in Austin, about 3 years ago, some groups I'm involved with came together and we bought a building to create a progressive community center. And a lot of things happen there. There are offices for groups working on campaigns. There's meeting space, you know, event space. But I think in retrospect, probably the most important thing we have accomplished with that community center is it is a place now where people know that if they come to 5604 Manor, the name of our building, if they come there, they can talk openly about the things that really are on their minds and in their hearts. And there's an incredible amount of satisfaction to know you've kind of beat the dominant culture and created a space where people can speak honestly and openly. It may seem like a minor victory, but when we're up against this entertainmentized society, this spectacle society, this mass-mediated society, those little victories, I think, are very important. And again, not to be a broken record here, but KABU and community radio are so essential to this. I come out of a newspaper background. I'm a lifelong journalist or journalism professor, and I love newspapers. I love picking up print products. But over the last couple of decades, I have really come to understand the value of community radio. I can tell the difference when I go to a town to do a speaking event, when that town doesn't have a vibrant community radio station and a town that does. It's a different kind of conversation that goes on.
I want to remind people you are listening to Positively Revolting. If you like this show, please go to our fan page on Facebook. You can like us there, and we can continue the flow of information throughout the week. You can find us on Facebook, where we are, in fact, facebook.com/positively revolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter, thanks to our intern who is starting to tweet. Thank you, Sarah, for dragging us into the new world. That's a positive revolt at Twitter thing. So, I'm Ani, here with Lynn. Our guest this morning is Robert Jensen, who, among other things, is a professor of the School of Journalism at the University of Texas in Austin, and the author of the just-released Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. Robert, how do we shift from being passive consumers of other people's expert opinions to actually honing our own ideas, to having the chutzpah to bring our ideas out of ourselves, to examine them, to throw them on the table? How do we help each other in this process?
Well, I think you're focused on the right idea, which is we don't do it alone. In an isolated culture, you don't overcome the isolation by yourself. It's kind of self-evident. So community groups, reading groups, book groups, anything, church discussion groups, anything where you can come together is crucial these days. And so I'm a big fan of all of those kinds of endeavors. How are we going to do it? Well, first of all, obviously, we have to get information sources beyond the mainstream media and quite frankly, beyond mainstream education. I work at the University of Texas at Austin, and I'm just as critical of the curriculum and practices of my university as I am of the practices of mainstream media. So recognizing that there is a need for information outside of those traditional channels is crucial. And then also recognizing that there is so much of that information that no one of us can filter, evaluate, and select the best sources by ourselves. I think a lot of us at this point are not reading alone. We are reading together. That is, much of what I read during the day, it comes through recommendations from others. I have a friend who's an expert in the Middle East. I have a friend who monitors energy news. I have a friend in the sustainable food movement. And I read the things they send me because I don't have the expertise or the time necessarily to go into every one of those arenas and evaluate the foreign news coverage that might be considerably better than our own, the independent media that might be considerably better than the mainstream. We've got to do this together, and that means that things like Facebook and Twitter, which I must say I was reluctant to get involved with originally, do have that value. They are easy ways to share reliable information, and that's, I think, how we start to do it. We do it together. We do it face-to-face. We use the digital tools that are available in judicious ways, not to overtake our lives, but to help us, you know, sort through this amazing amount of information that now is in front of us.
And that's the judicious part. That's the hard part, since screens are so incredibly addictive.
Exactly. You know, we talk about addiction in traditional terms: drugs, alcohol, nicotine, that sort of thing. But increasingly, the advances in neuroscience and psychology are making it clear there are behavioral addictions. The one we're used to talking about is gambling, people talking about being addicted to gambling. But it's quite clear that the screens, the internet, has that addictive-like quality mm-hmm. as well. I first encountered this in the study of the pornography industry, where the porn producers know very well there's a way to keep people in a porn loop. And increasingly, we were hearing from young men who felt trapped in that. And that is applicable across, I think, all of the domains of the web. So I think everybody's had the experience of sitting down to research something on the web, expecting to spend 15 minutes to get a piece of information. And then 5 hours later, you look up and say, what happened in the
mm-hmm.
afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a single person who not only hasn't had that experience, but struggles with it. So again, the main thing, I think the theme for me today seems to be, you can't do this alone. Everything that we have to resist, all the ways we have to educate ourselves, all the ways we have to rebuild communities, are dependent on a collective action and a collective sense of responsibility. And I would also say, at the risk of sounding too upbeat, because that's not my usual position to be too upbeat about much of anything these days, a sense of collective joy. You know, I always make the distinction
huge.
Between pleasure and joy. This is a culture that sells us lots of pleasures. And, you know, the pleasures
and
of food.
Precious little joy. It is
yeah,
true.
Yeah, and precious little joy. Now, I've got nothing against pleasure. Don't get me wrong. Pleasure is part of life. But to me, there's an important distinction between pleasure and joy. Pleasures can be experienced individually and by oneself. I don't think joy can. I think joy is inherently a collective enterprise. And so I think we should spend a whole lot more time thinking about how to be joyful rather than how to pursue pleasure.
What a good segue that is for our pitching segment.
And
well,
let's goodness,
go here, Robert.
You mean, is there a fun drive going on?
Yes, there is. There
well,
is,
what a
in
surprise.
Fact. Hey, SW, hey, Teresa.
You might not know it, but yes, hello, I'm Cultural Norm, and I'm here with Norma, and we want you to buy lots of cars and pharmaceutical products to make yourself feel better temporarily. Isn't that right, Norma?
It is right, and we are joined in our efforts by Leslie in Southwest Portland. She's a student on financial aid and calls on other students to join up. The number to call, 877-500-5266. That's how you do it. Sylvia has also called in. She's from Gresham. Lynn from Northeast Portland. Ronnie from White Salmon, Oregon. No, wait.
Washington.
Is that Washington? White Salmon.
White Salmon,
we're
Washington,
to claim
across
it.
The Bridge
this
of the Gods.
This is a territorial
yes.
move here. She says,
I pledge my flag in White Salmon.
She says, this is the only radio. KBOO is the only radio she doesn't yell back at. And so because of these people, We have gotten $160 in, which leaves us, let's see, $1,040 and just a few minutes, which means the rest of you who have been holding back.
Oh, yeah.
Who have been admirably restrained.
This is the time to call toll-free.
This is a matching period.
Toll-free,
877-500-KBOO.
That is correct for the next 23 minutes. You can double the impact of your donation without any extra money out of your pocket just by calling toll-free, 877-500-KBOO, because there is a match, a dollar-for-dollar match up to $500. So definitely give a call. Get a copy of Robert Jensen's book, Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue, all about how to make the collective effort to make our lives worth living, get the information you need, share the information, enrich your intellectual lives, and get away from the places that that want to, the information from the places that want to sell you things. You know, Lynn just mentioned that the other non-commercial outlet has gotten rid of the interactive radio that happened, the talk radio that you could talk back to. You know, they're going to do just nationally syndicated stuff for the most part. They're going to do a lot of manufactured stuff. So this is the outlet. This is the outlet when you can still be interactive. You can interact with the guests on the radio through your phone, through your computer, through the Twitter and the Facebook, and you can
participate.
And you can participate with the folks behind us, the happy volunteers who
right now would love to take your call at 877-500-5266. I know that I heard one phone ring. That means we have four lines left because I can keep track of that, even two rooms away. That's 877-500-5266. Come on, my friends. It is that moment. If you have been listening to the show for a while, or even just maybe you started this morning, go ahead and give us a call and say this is the kind of dialogue you can support, that you want to participate in, that you want to make sure is here and accessible for your community, so that we can really help each other get through the changes we all need to make to build that world, to recreate it around us, to make our world that world that reflects love, truth, and beauty over corporate greed and, you know, that culture of death that is currently sort of, well, situating around us. We want to break through that. We want to do this better and brighter. We want you to do it with us. 877-500-5266. Give now to KBOO for $60 donation. You can get a copy of Robert Jensen's latest work, Arguing for Our Lives, A User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. That's a $60 minimum contribution. And then your $60 is magically doubled. That's $120 into your community radio station, thanks to an anonymous KBOO volunteer who is making this a matching period. I guess I don't have to say one anymore. Okay, fine. 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm.
And we want to thank Brooke. She is a new member from Southwest Portland. Thank you so much, Brooke, for calling in at 877-500-KBOO. You can also go online at kboo.fm. And every day of our spring membership drive, you have a chance to win a print of a historic KBOO poster suitable for framing. Today's poster is Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger, a performance in Portland from some years past. Submit your entry before 3 p.m. today at Pacific Daylight Time at kboo.fm, or come in and have a cup of coffee with us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Look through all of our possible thank you gifts. We would love to, because it is News and Public Affairs Day, we would like to recommend the KBOO 4-gig audio flash drive available for a $120 minimum donation. That's $10 a month with tons of amazing, yes, literally tons of amazing speakers that fit on the thumb drive. And you can get all that for a $10 a month donation when you call toll-free 877-500-KBOO.
Normally, we're matchless, but right now we're in a matching period. And that's why you need to call the number. The number again, 877-500-5266. Now, I don't know the exact number at this point, but we have gotten in several calls, and I think that I can guesstimate that with the matching period, we are down well below $700 to go, which means that you can call now and help us get to our goal of $1,200 for this hour. We're getting to the halfway point, and we're depending on you to realize that this is the time that you now need to call. I would like to suggest that you spend 3 minutes on the phone with us, and if you would like to use your, well, if you want to use your plastic, then you can join just sort of pretty much instantly that way. And if you would like to donate in a sustaining way, then $10 a month will be quite sufficient for you to get a copy of, not a copy, but one of those shirts, actually that shirt, the shirt that says, not just for, and then has a list of, well, kind of joking, sarcastic, heck, I'll just read them, commie pinko freaks, self-righteous gutter punks, drug-addled peaceniks, anarcho-syndicalists, hippie tree huggers, gay hillbillies, militant vegans, geriatric deadheads, or the foil hat brigade, anymore. You can get that for $10 a
month. When you call, toll free, 877-500-KBOO. That's where it starts. And you have a couple of minutes to do so before we talk again with Robert Jensen, 877-500-KBOO.
The matches are still flaming.
Our happy volunteers are looking forward to talking with you and telling you all about the possibilities of how to join KBOO with a credit card, maybe with a check that you pay later, maybe with a monthly deduction from checking. But it doesn't start until you start by calling 877-500-KBOO.
Thank you very much, SW. Thank you very much, Teresa. And again, thank you very much, Robert, for being with us.
Great to be with you.
And you are listening to Positively Revolting here on your community radio station this morning. Our guest is Robert Jensen, a professor in the School of Journalism at University of Texas and the author of many things, including the just released Arguing for Our Lives, a User's Guide to Constructive Dialogue. You know, one of the things I really want, the hour is flying by as it always does. One of the things I would love to get into is pushing past that superficiality of sound bites. You know, we have this idea, you know, it's like when we have an idea, a belief, instead of really examining it, instead of sort of drilling down and seeing how it sort of vetting it for ourselves, we get into these superficial sound bites. We start talking like memes. We, you know, sort of, we've heard it, we'll pass it on without critical thought, and stay in that sort of safe, superficial realm. How do we again, encourage each other to not talk in sound bites, to in fact understand the implications of our beliefs and how they tie into our praxis?
You know, I think that's so important because, you know, I consider myself on the political left with feminist roots and concerned about these fundamental questions of ecological sustainability. I like to think that we're right about these things. I like to think that we're the ones with the critical analysis. And to a large degree, I would argue for that. But every movement, every point of view, every ideology can fall into laziness, intellectual laziness, let's call it, as you're pointing out. Take the question for the struggle for racial justice. I've written and spoken a lot about this. And one of the things I always do with audiences is talk about how we've fallen into a kind of lazy conversation about diversity and multiculturalism. Is diversity a good thing? Yes. Is multiculturalism a good thing? Yes. But are we really going to get to the heart of the problem of white supremacy by just trying to promote a more diverse and multicultural society without looking at the underlying questions about the distribution of wealth, the racialized disparities in the use of force, even deadly force, by law enforcement officers, the fact that a disproportionate share of the prison population is black and brown, all of these things which get difficult. But the diversity and multiculturalism language has kind of taken over, especially in academic and often in corporate diversity training settings. And so pushing back against that safe kind of language of diversity and multiculturalism, I think, is an example of taking our obligation seriously. If we really do want a better world, we can't settle for the analysis that's the easiest for us to deal with. And I think the place where this is most important is on the ecological front, because I think any way you slice it, the contemporary level of consumption, especially in the first world, is simply unsustainable. That means we have to talk about really dramatic changes in our lives. And those changes are going to have to be collective, which means there's going to have to be government. You know, we're going to have to talk about things like rationing, and not just, you know, rationing energy, but rationing everything. Those are tough conversations, and we're going to have to push ourselves because the dominant culture is not going to push it, obviously.
Well, and there seems to be an inverse correlation between how deeply held a belief is and how one is willing how willing one is to critically examine it. You know, to me, it leads to sort of a it's just the way it is absolutism, like capitalism is, of course, the natural result of our evolutionary beings. You know, things like that. How do we, again, to expose our really deeply held beliefs to an analytical process can be really threatening. And I talked earlier about trying to break through that discomfort. You know, it's like when we start feeling uncomfortable, if we look at our beliefs and we look at our actions and they aren't matching up and it makes us kind of squidgy, we tend to just shut down.
Absolutely.
How do we keep pushing?
Well, let's take the example you offered. Any politics and idea about social justice comes from an understanding of human nature. Now, we know what the capitalists say about human nature. They say that we're by nature greedy, self-interested people who can't be expected to cooperate, and the whole economy is based on that idea. Well, we reject that, and we say that human beings are fundamentally egalitarian and cooperative in nature, and we have a history that we can access to realize that. Well, you know, that's true. We are, I think, fundamentally as a species geared toward cooperation. But it's also true we can be pretty nasty creatures. And so the fact that we do have this complex nature means we've got to deal with that complexity. It's not enough to come up with, as you were calling it, sound bites or you know, sort of easy to assert ideas that unfortunately don't really answer the problems we're facing. And, you know, we've just got to be, I think you're right, comfortable with that. And comfortable also with the recognition that we could be wrong at any given moment. I mean, I've certainly been wrong at various times in my life, and I don't think I've achieved some
perfect consciousness. It's also an important part of being a complete person to be wrong once in a while.
Absolutely. You know, in the book I quote a friend and I think a great singer-songwriter, John Gorka, who says we should always treat each other as infinitely complex, with all of us capable of being very thoughtful ways of being wrong. And I thought John really captured something, thoughtful ways of being wrong. I can be thoughtful, I can be honest and rigorous in my thinking, and still end up being wrong. It's happened to me before, and it's going to happen to me again.
Right on. And speaking of being wrong, I'm fortunate enough to have a group of folks I can discuss some of these really chewy issues with. And we've been working on, how do we just go ahead and get about to the business of smashing patriarchy?
Yeah.
And one of the things that we have noticed, and certainly it's not a new notice, but now we have each other to bounce this off of, the more we sort of put out there that there is a power structure that does benefit male-bodied, you know, straight, white men, that there is male privilege, that there is, that this exists, that there is white skin privilege, the more pushback we get, right? So,
well, yeah, absolutely.
Then you must be saying something that works.
When we go to the core of our own identity, we should expect pushback. It would be striking if we could critique white supremacy and patriarchy. And as a white man, I know from direct experience how
right.
challenging that can be. It would be crazy if people didn't get angry, didn't push back. I encountered this just last week where I made a critique on both fronts at a fraternity house and was actually asked to leave. They kicked me out. I mean, you know, you can't, in some sense, when you touch that discomfort, you know you're doing real work. Now, how to negotiate that, how to make sure that you don't produce that discomfort and then you can kind of blow up the room is tough. That's one of the great organizing challenges. Is how do you honestly confront people with truth and yet create a condition under which they are willing to move forward? You know, I don't have any paint-by-numbers, you know, booklet to do that, but that's where we always have to stay in that tension. And that means, I think, most importantly, we have to be willing to look at ourselves as well. The one thing I do know for sure is that when I can, in front of a group, demonstrate that I'm willing to hold myself accountable, just as I'm asking people in the group to hold themselves accountable, it's much more likely something productive will happen. Luckily, I'm not that bright, so I make a lot of mistakes. So I give myself endless amounts of examples of how I've screwed up. But when we can honestly reflect on that, I think not only do we become better people, I mean, the degree to which we can be critically self-reflective obviously makes us better people, but it also makes us far more effective political organizers, public speakers, writers, whatever it is we're doing to try and change the world.
Well, and that sort of self-truth really soothes people's anxiety a little bit. And
yeah.
That's part of why none of this works, is because folks are so anxious, they're ready to pop off at any minute.
Right, and I do think there's something about the polarized nature of contemporary politics that means people are often afraid to admit that they are wrong. You know, if you take as a model for political debate what you see on cable television news, you're never going to want to admit you're wrong, because then you open yourself up to a kind of almost a mocking, and which is so much of the theater of contemporary television. So, again, breaking out of those mainstream circles, whether it's the media circle, the political circle, the educational circle, creating spaces where we don't have to play by those rules, strengthening our own not only intellectual and analytical abilities, but our own emotional abilities to deal with all of this, and then going out to try and organize, to try and work as activists. I think that's the model. And, you know, obviously that's a lot of hard work. It isn't accomplished quickly. It's not accomplished alone. You have to commit to groups over a long period of time. But that's also where the rich life, I think, is. You know, at the beginning of the show, it was mentioned I helped produce a documentary film about Abe Osheroff, a radical activist, not famous, but a really truly committed and wonderful person. And Abe, you know, on his deathbed in his 90s, said, you know, I don't have a lot of money, but I have lived a rich life. I have been all my life committed to political organizing and activism. I have, as a result of that, been around some of the most remarkable people I can imagine. And so there is a payoff to this for ourselves. It's not all doom, gloom, and misery. When we do this kind of work, I think, at least from my own experience, I can attest, we can create rich and meaningful lives. And that's really, I think, in the end, maybe the best argument for why we should be doing this.
Yeah. Indeed. And speaking of which, the other thing that we're doing here, of course, is raising money today.
Yes. And money.
And I'd like to make one request, please.
Sure. Yes.
In addition to your very kind introduction where you mentioned books I've written and that kind of thing, I'd like to put something else at the top of my bio, a supporter of KBOO. So when we're done with the interview, I'd like you to switch me over to your volunteer so that I can make a donation. I don't even live in the same town.
Well,
but
thank you,
Robert.
We're not
I'm
done
so
with you.
Jazzed. I'm so jazzed by you. So that's my challenge.
We're not done with you yet, Robert. We want to keep you on while we tell people to call toll-free 877-500-KBOO, because we have been fascinated listening, all the volunteers back here in the phone rooms who have been answering your phone when you call 877-500-KBOO. KBOO have been fascinated by Robert Jensen's talk about switching off the nattering classes and putting getting together with the people who matter, the people who are curious, the people who care about community, about the biosphere that sustains them. And we need to be sustained here at this biosphere we call KBOO, because we are at about $325 for this matching period, and we are looking for some more people to call 877-500-KBOO to get us all the way to the match. The anonymous KBOO volunteers made a generous offer to match the $500, the first $500, but only for the next 4 minutes. That's right, 4 minutes until 9 o'clock. And so you need to call right now, 877-500-KBOO. We've been enjoying Robert Jensen. I have I love Austin, Texas, where he is a professor. Been down there, been swimming in Barton Springs. I have met Earth Firsters with guns. And next to me, the lovely Teresa Mitchell has actually spent a great deal of time down in Austin, Texas, which is...
I used to be the canoe rental person Zilker Park.
Where it is a oasis of coolness in the middle of, well, Texas.
No comment. 877-552-66. Now, we have gotten in, let's see, $325, and we double that. That means we've got $650 down from, we're over halfway. So it only takes a couple of minutes for you to join up. And here's the number, 877 is the toll-free number, 877-552-66. Now, if you're employed, you can probably afford to give us a little bit every month, and I would like to suggest that you do so and that you get a copy of the book. And let me just check with S.W. Konzer here to make sure that is a $5 a month donation.
Yes, it is a $60 minimum pledge.
That's a nice, easy way to get your feet wet.
$5 a month, but you know, you can pledge $6, $7, $10 a month if you like. You can $20 a month. If you've got $20 in your pocket this month, I bet you're going to have $20 in your pocket next month.
And I would suggest that you give 1 hour's wage every month. I think that's a good way of sustaining us, of equalizing, of sort of spreading it out in that many hands making light work sort of thing, as KBOO is raising $99,000 this spring to keep going in our 45 years. We have a 45-year legacy. We would love for you to be a part of that legacy. Jump on in. The water is fine. We would love to hear from you now at 877-500-5266. And again, that $60 donation can get you a copy of Robert Jensen's latest book, Arguing for Our Lives. It's a really engaging read about critical thinking, about how to work with each other, how to engage each other, how to help each other hone arguments, how to listen to that feedback.
A great gift for your Fox listening to friends.
We have barely scratched the surface of this book, and yet we are quickly running out of time. So do give us a call at 877-500-5266 and say, yeah, you want a copy of this book so you can continue checking it out on your own. Maybe you would like to give us that 1 hour's wage every month. I do seriously suggest you do that. It's how I've been supporting the station for quite some time. I work here, I volunteer here, and I give an hour's wage every month because what the heck? It is community radio, and it is vital to our social change work in this area, in the world. Please do support us now. Help us raise that matching fund. It would be so sad not to raise that full $500. So come on in and call now. 877-500-5266.
We want to thank Nancy. She's a renewing member from Southeast Portland. I want to thank Carol, who is a renewing member from Monmouth, Oregon. Thank you, Carol. And Monica. Monica, a new member from Northeast Portland. Thank you, ladies.
Welcome
that is fabulous.
Aboard, Monica.
We're getting closer and closer, and you can be the person that puts us over the top. We're that close. 877-500-5266. And yes, it does have to be you that does it. And yes, it does have to be right now, because we all know what happens if you put it off. Don't put it off. Call us right now. Pull over if you need to. 877-500-5266 and call KBOO. We have some more fabulous programming coming up, but I know that you'll want to get in your call right now to support Positively Revolting. How long have you been Positively Revolting?
We've been on 19 years. 19 years we've been doing this, and we are out of time, so do keep that phone ringing. As we are raising the last of that $500 match and raising our $1,200 goal this morning, I know we can do it. Thank you, everyone who's called to support us, and members of BARF, thanks for supporting. That's my support group. I love them. 877-500-5266. Please do keep your support coming into KBOO Community Radio. Support Positively Revolting. And Robert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Robert.
I'll be back with you in a moment to take your pledge. And keep on listening to News and Public Affairs Day all day long here on KBOO, your very own community radio station.
Spring Membership Drive, KBOO Navigator Report. KBOO has embraced becoming a media hub, a regional community resource dedicated to providing access and programming that fulfills the art and education needs of our vast, multicultural Cascadia region. This is a huge undertaking, and one that we are beginning now. We are reaching out to other community radio stations, small local newspapers, and the community access television stations. We are discussing how to better serve our communities, leverage resources, and share our skills and services. That is why we need you now to become a member and pledge your financial support to KBOO. You can have a part in this vision. You can help create a community media network with KBOO at the helm, a network that includes a remote KBOO office in Salem with a reporter who daily covers what is happening in our state government, more rural and isolated communities being served with local access to the media, and in the end, a truly informed and participatory democratic region. Please become a member today. Your dollars will help support the revitalization of KBOO now and into the future. Thank you. Your donations are greatly appreciated. This has been Lynn Fitch, KBOO Navigator.
Good morning. You are listening to News and Public Affairs Day on KBOO Portland. We are airing all news and public affairs until 8 p.m. today. We'll be hearing talks by Amy Goodman, Bill McKibben, Raj Patel, and Michelle Alexander, plus lots of other great shows throughout the day. Up next in part one of our special day, we will hear Israeli writer and activist Miko Peled on Beyond Zionism. Miko Peled is an Israeli writer and activist living in San Diego. He is the author of The General's Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine. His book follows the development of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict from a national and personal perspective. His talk was recorded at Portland State University on February 11th. Here is Israeli activist and author Miko Peled.
...in the movement from which the State of Israel sprang out, Zionism. You know, what is Zionism all about? What did the early Zionists, my grandparents' generation, they believed, and they were able to sell this, that the Jewish people today, because they are somehow related to the ancient Hebrews that used to live in that region some couple thousand, 2,000-3,000 years ago, these same Jewish people have a right to go and live there now. And the word that they used was return. So I never lived there, my parents never lived there, my grandparents never lived there, their great-great-great-parents never lived there. But somehow the claim was that they have a right to return to their ancient homeland because, although historically it's not absolutely clear, they claim to have this relationship or this connection to the ancient Hebrews. And so they have the right to go, conquer the land, and make it their own. And again, the word that they used was return. Return to their homeland. Jews to return to their homeland, even though these are not the same people at all. In fact, there's a couple thousand years between the people that lived there and the people and the Jews today. And they were able to sell this. They were able to sell this to the powers that be. They were able to sell this to other people. They didn't sell it very well to other Jews, mind you. Most Jews didn't take them seriously. But they were able to sell this idea. It's a pretty insane idea to begin with. But when we put this next to another right of return that is being discussed, and I am referring to the right of return of the Palestinians, in any negotiations, in any discussion between Israelis and Palestinians, the right of return of the Palestinians is an issue that always comes up, and it's an issue that Israelis refuse to discuss. The right of return of the Palestinians is always, Israelis always claim it has to be taken off the table. We cannot negotiate on this. The past is behind.